pretend Brad's here.
False man.
Oh, wow.
All right, we're going to continue with our media availabilities here at Darlington Raceway. We've now been joined by Chris Buescher and Ryan Preece. Thank you both for joining us. Chris, I'll start with you. I believe you had a quote earlier this week that said something that you anticipate this race may be one of the most difficult you've ever driven. Talk a little bit about that and why you think that might be.
Yeah, I think looking at it, maybe it's because I'm just not as prepared as Preece. Showing up in a fire suit a couple hours early here.
He lied to me and said I needed my fire suit on.
So, you know what? I think we look at this racetrack, what it's been in years past, the fall off the surface, how it's aged. This was a higher fall off racetrack before we started talking about higher fall off tires, right? And so it's already been well on its way. And now with the, you know, the tire that we're able to successfully run here for probably a year now or so. What Goodyear's done on that side of things has really helped improve the racing, and then to come here with more power and significantly less downforce, I just feel like we're going to be out of control, and I think you're going to be screaming and wanting tires way more than the physical allotment will allow us to put them on. And I think that, I hope that the passing opportunities go up if somebody's really struggling. We got a couple of different lanes, look for fresh racetrack, and I hope it makes great racing. But I know we're have a whole lot more questions than answers, but we're excited to fire off into practice here, see what that brings, and especially the race.
All right. And Ryan, your thoughts as well on the race tomorrow?
Well, I definitely think we're heading in the direction of what a lot of us drivers have been talking about for years. And that's, if there's a caution, you know, four or five laps, and I'm talking outside of just Darlington, you didn't want to see guys stay out for track position and be rewarded for it. You want to see the guys that decide to give up track position come down for tires and, you know, make their way through the field, much like we saw Corey Heim do last night. I mean, how exciting was that for two laps? You had guys that stayed out because they didn't have any more tires, and then you had a guy that had I don't know how many laps, you know, those scuffs out on him, five laps. And, boy, it looked like he was Superman. So that's the type of style of racing that I want to see. And, you know, less downforce, the more horsepower, and heading in this direction is what I've been, you know, beating the drum on for years. So it's nice that it's happening, and you guys are going to be you're going to have quite the show for it. So yeah, definitely excited about this weekend. Much like Chris said, there's a lot of questions that will be answered here in about, you know, an hour or so. Kind of understanding of what balance we all were projecting and which one's right and which one's going to need some work on for tomorrow. But certainly feel like, you know, our RFK cars are going to be fast, and our Oscar Mayer Ford Mustang Dark Horse is going to be fast as well.
All right, we'll go ahead and open for questions. I see there are a couple hands raised. I'm going to do my best to get to as many as I can. We're going to start up front here with Mike Hembree, front row right here.
I love that. It was awesome. It was.
Mike Hembree, NASCAR.com. Chris, this track, perhaps more so than most, tends to divide drivers into drivers who get it and drivers who maybe don't. Is the additional horsepower going to make any changes in those kind of groups or change that dynamic, you think?
Probably just probably put an exponent on it would be the prediction. You know, because you've had a certain amount of understanding how hard you can push here in the past already. So this is it's not completely new to us. It's just the extent of what we feel like we're going to fight. So so I don't think that it changes who comes down here and gets it right. I think that it just it's going to take some time, some practice to figure out what that looks like. How much can you really gain on the tail end of a run by giving up a little bit early? I think that's the bigger question. You know, we talk about track position, and it's the couple of phrases that we hate to hear in these rooms, right? Is track position and aero and dirty air and all these things. And so we have these conversations because track position mattered because it was so hard to pass. If the fall off is as significant as we feel it is, can you from behind the wheel make a difference to where when we get 20 or 30 laps into a run, come charging through there because you've taken care of your stuff more. And you know, I think that's what we predict we'll see. I can't answer a whole lot of questions with accuracy yet, but I think it's just going to put an exponent on it.
As Ryan mentioned about the five team last night, what they did, where's the line there and the kind of gamble you take about trying to hold a set back, but in doing that, you might get yourself further behind during the last half of the race or so, and then does it help you to have another set?
I'm glad I'm not a crew chief this weekend. Let's put it that way. I don't want to have to make that decision, and have to live with the consequences if it doesn't go right. That being said, I'm putting a lot of pressure on Scott and Derek, but it is a big decision, right? It's going to matter at some point. Somebody's going to get it right. Somebody's going to get it wrong. But at the end of the day, I think it's just the calculated risk you take. I can't say what the right answer is right now, but as the race plays out, that's why those guys have gotten to where they are and why they're so good at it is trying to read the vibe. I think Jeremy Bowen said the vibe of the race last year at some point, and I didn't see that one coming from him, but read the vibe of the race and figure out if you feel like setting something back is going to be a right play, and if it doesn't, and you know, everybody else put stickers on one more time than you, it come down to the checkered flag, you're going to pay a price for that, right? You're going to lose a significant amount of time somewhere in that that entire cycle, but it could certainly make someone look like a hero at the end too. So that's risk versus reward, I guess. Same as always, just might look more dramatic here.
All right, if I can get a microphone to Kelly, please. And then John in the middle.
Kelly, CrownedAllRacer.com. This is for both of you, if you can answer it. You, Chris, you said it a minute ago, you and Ryan both said, you know, we're going to have something to watch from here in the media center. The grandstands are going to have their eye test of what they're going to see tomorrow. Behind the wheel, how will you two, when you get out of the car, decide if that was a good race for you, the driver?
So Chris was just talking about how you attack the beginning of the runs versus the end of the runs. And to be honest with you, I saw, even at Vegas, that's not notoriously known as a track that is going to wear tires out and you're going to see comers and goers. And late into those runs, there was guys that I saw in the first 10 to 12 to 15 laps that they would go really, really hard and be really, really fast. But after those 15, 16 laps, they were holding on and coming back. And you know, the guys that chose to take care of them a little more, you saw them go forward. I know there was a pack of us that, you know, in a 35 lap run, it was a handful at Las Vegas. So now we're at Darlington that is known for wearing tires out, that is known for visually seeing race cars, you know, jumping and chasing around. So I think, like Chris was saying, how you choose to keep track position, or, you know, say, hey, you know what, you go ahead, you burn this up, I'm going to see you in 10, 15 laps. I'm excited to see that. So when I get out of the race car and I look back and say, okay, I was able to be disciplined and then reap the rewards, that'll be the point where I get out and say, okay, we're hitting it here. We're figuring it all out. So, but yeah, I guess you'll have to check back after the race.
All right, John, go ahead. And if I can get a microphone to Matt Weaver, please, here. Matt, raise your hand so they can see you. Thank you.
John Newby, FanBuzz. I know that you both are, you know, fairly private people, but I'm curious, you know, like with the more appearances and sponsor videos and things like that you guys have done recently, what does it take to convince you guys to do that besides, you know, obviously like DAP program stuff?
You know, for us, that stuff's separate from the program. That is, that's our partners. And honestly, it is them saying we want to invest in NASCAR and in RFK Racing, and we want this to be what people think about when they see our brand. And Trimble being the most recent one, I think that honestly, I pretty much live about my entire life just being told where to go and when. So when something like that comes up, it's something you don't know much about till you roll in there and everyone starts talking, figuring out what we're going to do. And and then it's just a matter of having fun with it and playing off of it. So, you know, for us, you think about NASCAR 20 years ago, and, you know, there was more fan-facing interactions or commercials or stand-ups, whatever it may be. And we've been really fortunate to have partners that have bought into that, right, with, you know, with the Trimble video, with the consumer cellular video. The amount of times I get told to shut up, Chris, walking through the garage here every single weekend is a lot higher than it used to be. I'll say that. And you know what? That's great for us, right? That's just it's a way for us to have a little fun, and for our partners to get just a little bit more out of the sport that we love to come participate in every weekend. So I think it's hats off to our groups that have just said, you know what, we're going to commit to this. We're going to have fun. We're going to show everybody that NASCAR is where we want to be, and in RFK Racing, this is our group of people, and this is how we're going to promote our brand.
Hey, Ryan, can I get your thoughts as well?
Can you re-say your question again completely so I understand what you were asking?
Basically, I just know that you guys are both fairly private people over in your daily lives, but you're putting yourselves out there for these commercials, you know, for your sponsors. And I was curious, you know, what it takes to convince you to kind of
do that?
Yeah.
Okay, now I understand. Sorry, I was watching and listening, but I was also paying attention to the track. But so to answer your question, this is what you see on camera is very much natural. Like, that's how Chris and I are, and Brad. It's just we're not, you know, on putting Instagram videos and all that stuff at all points during the day. So I feel like for us, when we have Trimble Productions or Kroger Productions or some of those other ones, that's kind of how we are in those environments. You know, they're very natural.
Matt
Weaver, Motorsport.com. First, for Chris, you were asked about the celebration of Jack earlier this week, so you addressed it to a certain degree, but I want to ask it a different way and for Ryan to answer too. Just in terms of all the people that were there and all the different conversations and stories that were shared over the course of that morning or afternoon, what are the things that stand out the most about what you guys were able to take away from having that big family gathering, basically?
Yeah, there's a... So I've been at RFK. I'd signed up when I was 15, almost 16 years old. Right, I'm 33 now. So I've seen a lot of things, and I've heard a lot of things. I've been a fly on the wall in a lot of meetings, and it was funny to me that I'll start with the story. Tuesdays used to be the meetings. They're not now. They're Mondays or our post-race meetings. But Tuesdays used to be the post-race meetings. And that used to be that was the five Roush Cup cars. That was the Petty Motorsports cars. That was it was a meeting that took 2 or 3 hours, right, to get through. And and they were a little harsh. And Jack has an iron fist. And it was scary. And let me tell you, at 16 years old, just sitting in the meeting, listening to heroes of mine that you know are Hall of Famers now getting chewed out like that, I couldn't imagine what was going to happen to me when I screwed up. So it was funny that every driver that was there had some comment about how rough some of their Tuesdays went, right? And but the neat part about that was that every driver there had also won races under that roof, and those were great Tuesdays. But this was probably the best Tuesday that all the drivers collectively had ever had at RFK, right? That there were some scary moments. You didn't want to have to go first and explain why you sped on pit road, wrecked a race car in qualifying, you know, gave something away in closing lap. You didn't want to be there, but this was not that atmosphere, right? This was stories of the fun times. You know, Jack grinning from ear to ear, and just, you know, kind of going through what he's meant to all of our careers. And Mark, I think it was Mark, said it best. He stood up at the end and said that everybody sitting at those tables that has gotten to drive cup cars and win races for RFK were developed and built out of those walls, right? That that everybody got their start because Jack was willing to take a chance and put the development work in, and you've not seen that consistently through this garage here across the board. It's just not it's not been the standard operating procedure of any other team. And, you know, I think that that's really important to get across in Jack's legacy, is that he took chances on people, found them from other series. I didn't have the credentials to walk in a Roush and try and act like I could go drive a Cup car that day. But Jack took a chance, gave me the tools and the people and the resources to go figure it out and figure out how to win at the highest level of motorsports, right? So it's important to me that that is the side of Jack's legacy that everybody hears the most, because it is so rewarding to think about all the times that were tough, but also the times that were great. I'll let you speak for a bit, but it was a really great time. We really enjoyed that. Best Tuesday within those walls that I think most of us can remember.
That must be why our competition meetings are on Mondays and Wednesdays now. They didn't want to take away from Jack's Jack's days of their comp meetings. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, it was sitting around Carl Edwards, Mark Martin, Jamie McMurray, Jeff Burton, and you know, as race car drivers now, we grew up watching those guys. So they're all Hall of Famers. They're, you know, so there's a level of respect. Where I come from, you know, in the Northeast, you respected people like them and the ones you raced against. And so sitting at the same table, hearing some of those stories, I know you were there for them, but hearing Mark and Carl talk about them was really eye-opening and fun. So it makes you definitely appreciate it, the opportunity that I have, as well as being there now, as you know, and being there to honor Jack, because you know, I grew up, my family and my father loved Fords, so I grew up driving Fords, and you know, Jack Roush has a rich history with Ford, and you know, to be there where RFK honored him and NASCAR has honored him twice is a big deal, and it was great to be a part of.
All right, go ahead.
Tim Kettle, FAMO Motor Racing Network. Want to ask a question of both of you, sticking with the RFK theme. Your co-owner, Brad Keselowski, is going to make his 600th Cup Series start this upcoming or next weekend at Martinsville. And want to ask both of you, as drivers who have raced against him, obviously as a co-owner, he is the driver that you drive for, what he has meant either to you as a fellow competitor or what he has meant to the sport in his 600 races in the Cup Series.
So I would say that I will just speak to the most recent interactions with Brad and kind of what that means to me. And obviously he's been in this sport a really long time, you know, has a champion of our sport, you know, a future Hall of Famer of our sport. So when you think about all those years, think about watching him as a kid growing up while I was racing Legends cars or ARCA or whatever it may have been. I guess I have to admit at some point that I was under the RFK banner when the Carl and Brad feud was going on. And so I guess I wasn't really on Brad's side at that point, but we haven't had that discussion in person. But thinking about now and what Brad has done coming over, diving off into the ownership role as well as a driver and a teammate, it has been the most unique way to talk about race cars to your ownership, right? Because anything that we are experiencing in a race car, anything that we want to be better, he's living it at the same time, right? He wants that to be better. He wants our cars to turn better in the middle, and he wants the rear to be planted in the racetrack. He understands exactly where we're coming from. It's not going to somebody that is trying to guess where our headspace is at. And that is just, it's created this more direct and efficient line to making better race cars quicker. And, you know, that's come from him saying, you know, one, I want to be a race car driver. I want to be a winning NASCAR Cup driver. I want to be a champion of our sport, a multi-champion. But I also want to be a team owner. I want to have say in how a race team can develop and get better. And I give him tons of credit because I want nothing to do with team ownership. I have watched him run circles around us just back and forth through the shop nonstop through the amount of stuff he goes through to try and make that work. he owes we owe him a ton of credit, and probably more than he gets, because it's exhausting watching him. I can't imagine trying to live that life the same way. So it's really neat how it's all progressing and how it's ultimately helping us be able to fine tune and dial in race cars faster than you would in a different scenario there.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, Chris has been here at RFK since you were 16, 17. So you've seen all sides of it. You saw pre-next gen era, and then you saw next gen era where Brad came in. And what I came into was an already built solid foundation between Chris doing a lot of simulator work, posting, trying to build up, you know, credibility and making sure that our cars showed up fast week in and week out. And then I see Brad pushing the performance, you know, and constantly trying to make it so we can drive fast cars faster. You know, that's it's very important in our job. So I came into this organization where the foundation was already really solid, and now it's trying to go from where you guys are winning a couple races a year to like Brad wants to do. He wants to win 5+ races this year between all of us. So that's the goal, and constantly trying to push boundaries and be faster and make cars faster. And that's what, you know, much like Chris just said, I can appreciate him running around between buildings, making sure that every side of that of RFK is heading in the right direction to give us opportunities to win races, whether it be the pit crew, the cars, the sponsors. You know, we are trying to win in all aspects.
All right, as Chase makes his way up here, I'm going to go ahead and squeeze one last question in from Jordan Bianchi up front here.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. You guys kind of touched on it, but this weekend isn't about throwback schemes or anything as it was in the past, but you guys are running a throwback scheme this weekend. How important was it to you guys to do that this weekend with the recent events?
Yeah, it's not the throwback weekend, like you said, for the first time in a long time now, but you know, obviously with you know, the tragedy through the off season and what Greg Biffle and his family meant to RFK and Jack and this sport, you know, for us to be able to pull this together and you know, everybody back in our shop to make this happen to where we are all able to run a you know, the legendary 16 stylized font and run some form of a throwback for our partners to sign up to do that, because I know that's you know, it's always the discussion of it takes away from the brand identity of our person, and Fifth Third signed up and jumped at the opportunity to do it. And that means a lot to me personally, to Jack and to RFK as a whole, because this is, you know, it's just a way to remember Greg and everything that he accomplished for RFK Racing through the years. You know, it's hard to put together, but, it's a neat way for us to be able to kind of carry that that remembrance throughout the season and just in a bigger way for this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's Jack Roush had a lot of really memorable paint schemes. One of them was Greg Biffle's number 16 3M paint scheme, and mine, you know, the red, the black, the yellow, the white, it all stands out. So, you know, I had two occasions where I interacted with Greg. Once was a couple years ago at my race shop that I rented from David Reagan. He just happened to be around there and was talking with him. And then the other time was racing last year in the Crown Vicks, you know, at Stafford, and, you know, banging doors with him. So what I learned that day is those guys had a good time. They knew how to have a good time, and I respected him as a race car driver. So RFK jumped at the opportunity to be able to do this, and, you know, hopefully we can all have some really strong runs, you know, in his honor.
All right, Chris, Ryan, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank